All right. Well, as I said, we're here in chapter 24, and in the chapters that we just went through, we truly did in chapters 20 through chapter 23, we saw how the Lord delivered the Ten Commandments. He basically delivered the law to Moses and, you know, to the people. And it included, you know, I really thought, I found those chapters to be fascinating, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, but I just thought it was really interesting the way, you know, the Lord starts out with the law, and then he provided the judgments. And as I think about that kind of in the context that I can understand as a lawyer, you know, I think about what our law is comprised of, right? It's comprised of, you know, the statutes, and then there are regulations, and then there's case law. And that's really, that all sort of makes up the law. And just by way of sort of understanding that, you know, like there could be a law that would say, you know, in order to operate an insurance company, for instance, you are required to have an insurance license. And so that would be the statute. And then there would be regulation. How you controversies where a person, you know, is, you know, someone is suing because, you know, related to the law regarding licenses, either, you know, the government is suing someone because they don't have a license, or a person is suing because they believe that, you know, that the government has acted, you know, improperly with regard to, you know, denying a license or whatever the case is. And so you can see how you have all those things that fit together, and those things are used to make judgments going forward, and how the Lord in laying out his law really did a similar thing. You know, he has the law, you know, the Ten Commandments, and then we saw all of those different judgments or really like regulations on really providing detail and, you know, instructions to provide greater understanding of what the law requires and what would take place if a person were to violate those laws and stuff. And you even saw kind of like case law in a way, because there would be examples given, you know, like if a person, it talked about if you meet your enemy's ox or donkey and they're going astray, that you're supposed to do certain things. And so in some sense, it's almost like there's case law. And so it's like the Lord provided the whole thing. And so it really is the law, but at the same time, what this really also forms is a covenant. And, you know, a covenant, we know that a covenant is like a promise or a set of promises, and it's like an agreement, okay? And so what we're going to see in chapter 24 is where this covenant is really being entered into. So if we understand this to be like a contract, then it'll help us to understand really what's going on in chapter 24. And I guess that's kind of worth talking about a little bit, right? So what I talked about, you know, a few minutes ago when I was talking about laws, regulations, and case law, you know, that's one kind of contract. I mean, or law, you might say, right? Law that emanates from statutes and regulations and cases and stuff. But there's another kind of law. There's another kind of set of rules, I should say, that the law recognizes and enforces, and that those are laws or rules that come out of contract, and that's a contract is different from laws and regulations. And you can ask, well, how are they different? Well, with regard to laws and regulations, they apply to you whether you want them to apply to you or not. Okay, so in other words, if you're driving down the street, there will be signs posted that say, you can only drive a certain speed limit, right? There's a limit on how fast you can drive. There are requirements about you need to stop. There'd be a stop sign or a stop light or what have you. You can't just say, look, I haven't agreed to those things, and so they don't apply to me. Those rules, those statutes, and those regulations apply to you regardless of whether you have agreed to them or not. But with regard to a contract or a covenant, this is something that applies to you only if you agree to it, right? So you voluntarily take on a contract or a set of promises. And so for example, if I come to you and I say, hey, look, I'll cut your yard every Tuesday, and if you pay me $20, right? So before I agreed to that, I didn't have any obligation whatsoever to cut your yard. But once I then voluntarily enter into this agreement with you, now I'm bound by it, and the law will enforce the promises that are included in that contract, and will provide remedies for a failure or what the law calls a breach of those obligations. And so one of the things that we have to understand about this law that the Lord puts forward here is that it really, the Lord makes it a covenant. He makes it like a contract. And it's not, and so therefore, it will apply to these people, right? These Israelites, if they accept it. Okay. And so we can say that a biblical covenant is a set of conditional promises that are made by God. And it's an agreement between, in this particular case, it's an agreement between God and the Israelites, in which God is promising to protect them if they keep his law and they are faithful to him. And so that's what the Mosaic covenant, you'll hear people talk about the Mosaic covenant. That's what this is. And one of the things that we are careful to remind people as we go through this is that the law that the Lord lays out in this covenant that's being made is not a means of salvation, okay? And it was never intended to be that. But it would serve to distinguish them from the surrounding nations as a special kingdom, a special nation, a special people for God, and they were a kingdom of priests. Okay, and so that's what this whole covenant is all about. And we're going to see here in chapter 24 how the Lord, in essence, goes through a process that is very similar to the process that we today recognize as the process you go through to enter into a contract, right? And so I can just lay that framework out loosely, right? So in the law, in our current law today, right, we say that in order to enter into a contract, there has to be an offer made by one person, and then there needs to be an acceptance of that offer, and then there needs to be some kind of exchange of consideration, right? Something of value has to be exchanged between the parties. And so here we're going to see, in essence, that there's like an offer made. There's going to be an offer made to the people, and then they're going to sort of verbally accept that offer, and then the Lord is going to formalize that agreement or that covenant. And so it's kind of like the signing process or the closing process that we're going to see here in chapter 24. So with that introduction, let's start to look at chapter 24, starting at verse 1. It says, "Now he said to Moses, 'Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him.'" And so this is, you know, after all that we read about in chapters 20 through 23, where the Lord, gave all of the law here. And so now the Lord is saying to Moses, "I want you to come up, to me, right? Come up to the Lord, and I want you to bring all these others, right? Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and then 70 of the elders of Israel." And so we see that it's not just Moses that's going to come up here, but it's going to be Aaron and then his sons here. We know that these two sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, later on we're going to read that they were priests, and then they went and they offered strange fire before the Lord, and they were killed. And so they actually did something that the Lord, you know, didn't tell them that they were supposed to do. They just took it upon themselves to offer in a certain way, and it wasn't acceptable to the Lord, and so they're killed. And then also mentions here the 70 elders of Israel, and these are the ones that were selected. Remember when Moses's father had told him that he was being the judge of every single thing that was happening. And so he selected these people who could give judgments and stuff. And so these are the 70 elders of Israel are those individuals. And so they're really like the leaders, and they're the representatives of all of Israel. And the Lord is telling him to come forward, and they were to come to the foot of the mountain, as it were. And it says they were to worship from afar. And so one of the things that you can see from that is that under the law, and this is something that is pretty clear as we go through the Old Testament, you see something different. And quite frankly, I have to say that there are a number of, I'll just speak about my boss. I work for a guy who is, for all practical purposes, or based upon what I can tell, he's not a believer, but he has, there's a sense at which he's really curious, and he's really wanting to know about the Lord. And there have been people in his life over the years who have had an impact on his life. One of whom he was talking about today, this person that he worked for, who was the president of a company, and he considers her to be one of the most kind, and he was just talking to me about her today, about how just a wonderful person, and she's a Christian. And at one point in time, she said, "Hey, you ought to read the Bible," and he listened to the whole Bible. Okay. He said, he didn't really understand, much of it. But one of the things that he said that he noticed is that when you went from the Old Testament to the New Testament, there was something different, something just that was palpably different about the two. And there's a reason for it, right? You have the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and the New Covenant. And in the Old Covenant, you have this sort of situation that we see at the end of verse 24, where they're worshiping from afar. There's sort of this boundary. There are these boundaries under the law. In other words, under the law, the Lord would say how close you can get, right? But under the New Testament, under the New Covenant, that new agreement, the New Covenant, we get to decide how close or far we want to get to the Lord, okay? And so that's a completely different situation. But and so we see here that was clear that they were to worship from afar, and that Moses was the only sort of representative that the Lord would say, you know, could come near to him, but they shall not come near. And so then in verse 3, it says, so Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has said, we will do. And so what's going on here in verse 3? What's happening here is that Moses is standing before the people, and he is recounting. He is basically saying to the people all that we read from chapter 20 through 23. So basically, he's reading the entire law, which I've said is the covenant, right? It's the set of promises. It is the contract that the Lord is offering to Israel. And so in a way, what Moses is doing here in verse 3 is he's making an offer. You know, the Lord is basically saying, here is the law. Here is the covenant. Here are the set of promises. And then it's up to the people to decide, well, what are they going to do with that? And what it says here is that all the people answered with one voice. So they were all in agreement. They were all in unity. And they all said, all the words which the Lord has said, we will do. And so I would, again, if we're looking at this, you know, in the way that you kind of, the progression of entering into a contract, think about it, you know, like when you're talking to somebody about doing some kind of a deal, the first thing you would do is you just verbalize it. I mean, you might have like a term sheet or something, you know, some bullet points or whatever, but by and large, you're just going to the person and saying, here's the situation, you know, I want to buy, you know, your car for this amount of money, but I want you to throw in the mats, and I want you to get it washed, and I want you to fill it up with gas or whatever, right? So that kind of those are the terms, or those are the conditions or whatever. And then it's up to the other person to say either accept it, reject it, or whatever the case may be. And here it's saying they accepted it. They just said, yep, they you know, we'll do it. And and so then what takes place afterwards, in my view, is now the Lord is now going ahead and he's going to, you know, ink the deal, right? So you have people like, you know, I think about, you know, Pastor Bob, you know, when he was in the sales arena, you know, for years and years and years, he would go out and he would talk to clients and stuff like that, but, you know, prospective clients. He would explain to them the products, he would explain the pricing and everything else. And they, you know, have this whole proposal that they would put forward. And then the client would say, you know what, I like that, that's good. But, you know, maybe they'll you know, go back and forth a little bit, and they'll say, yeah, this is the deal that we want to do. And then Bob will go back to the most important people in his company, the lawyers, and they would produce a contract that would incorporate all of the things that they agreed to. And then they would put the contract before the client, and then now they would sign it, or they would mark it up or whatever. But ultimately, the goal would be to sign that written contract. And so what takes place in the balance here of chapter 24 is sort of that process of you know, documenting the agreement in writing, and then kind of like the execution of it or what have you. There's kind of that formality of executing. And so that's really what takes place here. But, you know, and some of the, you know, as you kind of, you know, as I was kind of preparing for this, you know, reading different commentaries or whatever, you know, some people kind of look at what's going on here, and they'll say that in a way it's like they just answered spontaneously, right? You know, Moses gives the deal, so to speak, the covenant, the set of promises, and they just answer right away without really thinking about it, you know. And the Lord talks about how we're to count the cost and stuff like that. And so in some ways you can argue that what takes place next also is where they're having another opportunity to really kind of think it through and kind of really see it before they sign. But in any event, this whole chapter is just talking about how this covenant was entered into, because, you know, there's a principle at work here, and that is that, you know, in all of the things that the Lord wants to do in terms of entering into these various covenants and so forth, he doesn't force anything on us. He puts the kind of the deal before us. He basically says, look, here's what I will do. And then it's up to us to decide voluntarily if we want to do that. The Lord never forces, he doesn't say, you must agree to this. That's a very important principle that even exists to this day, right? Because even in the new covenant, the Lord is saying, you know, all these different things about what he would do if we accept the covenant, but he doesn't force us to accept it. It's up to us to do it by our own free will. And so let's see what happens next. Verse 4, it says, and Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And so here we see that Moses, now he writes down all the words, you know, so it really is the kind of the progression that I mentioned before, where initially he sort of speaks out what the covenant is, what the deal is, and now he's going to take and write those words down so that those words are clear, they are unchangeable, you know, and there's no issue about, like, well, of one person remembering what the deal was in a different way than the other person did or what have you. There's clarity about that. And so we see Moses rising early in the morning and also building an altar here at the foot of the mountain of, you know, this is Mount Sinai. And we see these 12 pillars that represent each of the 12 tribes of Israel, okay, that he has built there. And then it says in verse 5, then he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And so here we see something interesting taking place here, where there are these offerings that are taking place. Now, this is before the Levitical law is established, but we see that there are these specific types of offerings that are being offered at this point in time, all as part of formalizing this covenant. And we see that there are two types of offerings. The first is a burnt offering. And a burnt offering is an offering of consecration. And you know, as we get into the book of Leviticus and going forward, we'll get really deep into what these things are. But an offering of consecration is an offering where they would take the animal. So let's say it's an ox, and they would put it on the altar, you know, with under fire, and it would be completely consumed. It would be completely burnt up, and that is to symbolize a consecrated life. Like, you know, for us, when we come to the Lord, it's sort of like your Romans 12, right? That you would present yourself as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to the Lord, which is a reasonable service. So the point is that you're giving everything to the Lord. Nothing is being held back. You're completely and fully consecrated to the Lord. And then the second one was a peace offering. And a peace offering is an offering of fellowship. And a peace offering is interesting in the sense that what's taking place there is that part of this offering, it goes to the Lord. And then the other part, the one who is offering it, eats that sacrifice. And so it's an offering of fellowship. And you know, there's that sort of principle in these times, in the ancient times, that when you sat down and you had a meal with someone, that you're really you're communing with them, you have fellowship with them. And when you're eating, you know, there's this idea that, you know, you're eating of the same thing, that you become a part of the other person. You know, there's this connection that you have. And so, but we notice that there's an order to this, you know, that there first is the offering of consecration, where they're giving themselves over to the Lord. And then there is the peace that comes out of that. And so you can say that the consecration would be like salvation, right? When we come to the Lord and we give ourselves over to him, and then we have the ability to have fellowship with him. But it's not, you can't have these in the opposite order. You can't have peace and fellowship with God and before you have this, you know, offering of consecration. And so these are all symbolic things that are taking place here as part of, again, finalizing this covenant. Verse 6 says, "And Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar." And so we see here that we have a couple of things. So in verse 5, these offerings took place, which means that there was a sacrifice, there was a death that took place. And then here we can see that very clearly, that there was the shedding of blood here. And what Moses will do here is he's going to take half of the blood from this, and he is going to sprinkle it on the altar. And one of the things that we can say about what's taking place here is there's a lot of blood involved here, right? Every ox has about 5 gallons of blood. So if you were to, you know, to take and drain the blood of an ox, you're going to have 5 gallons of blood. And so they would have sacrificed a lot of oxen here as part of what they were doing. So there's just going to be these basins, you know, these big, you call like buckets, right, of blood. And they're sprinkling it on the altar here, as part of what's going on here. Verse 7 says, "Then he took the book of the covenant and he read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, 'All that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient.'" And so there, you know, is this reading of the book of the covenant. And again, that book of the covenant is comprised of the law and the judgments that we see in chapters 20 through 23. And that is the book of the law. And so, like, for instance, in Psalm chapter 1, where it says, you know, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night." This is what is being referred to. The book of the covenant is the law that is being meditated on. And so it says here that he took and he read it in the hearing of the people, and then they responded to that they would be obedient. And then lastly, it says here in verse 8 that Moses took the blood and he sprinkled it on the people, and he said, "This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. And so he took that blood, he took blood, and he then now is sprinkling it on the people. And so you can imagine what that would be like, right? All this blood that is now going to be on the people, on their clothing and everything else. And this is the way in which, I just call it like the signing. This is the way in which they entered into this covenant. There's a lot going on here, but by and large, we can see that it was a very formalized process. And it's almost, kind of going back to, verse 3, where Moses initially just spoke out those words and then they responded, by going through this whole process, the Lord sealed that deal, and there's a lot to remember in it, right? Like a person, after having gone through all the things that are described here, there's no way you can kind of come back and go like, did I enter into a covenant? I don't know if I remember that, right? Like it's so, it sticks out, right? So much, right? That you can't, it's unmistakable. But one of the things that's really key about all of this is that there's a really a pattern that the Lord is laying down here in terms of the way in which he enters into any covenant, right? And including the new covenant, which we as Christians are under. And so what is that pattern? The first thing is that any covenant that the Lord would make, he will write it down, okay? And what I mean by that is that it's his covenant, it's his deal. He's the one who determines what that covenant is, okay? And so it's not like, I kind of gave that analogy of, Pastor Bob being the salesman and going and making an offer to sell products to a company and them negotiating back and forth, right, on the terms, like how many, how much money they were going to pay and everything else and all the other terms that they would be negotiating. But that's not the way that God's covenants are. God will put forward his covenant, his promise, and the terms, and we have the option of either accepting it or rejecting it, but we don't have the ability to come in and say, well, wait a second, I don't like the way this was worded. Can we change the words, of this whole thing? And so, one thing you can think about is that, we each have a our own personal relationship with the Lord, but we don't have our own private relationship with the Lord. So we enter into, a covenant relationship with the Lord, but it's on his terms. It's based upon his set of promises. Okay, and it's not based upon anything private, And so, sometimes you'll see people who kind of, they come to the Lord and they want to kind of dumb it down. Like they want it to be their agreement. And so they have their own ideas about, the Lord would say, we're not to be sexually immoral. We're not supposed to do certain things. And we'll say, oh, well, that doesn't apply to me, or I have the Lord understands, or the Lord, it's different for me or something. But no, that's not the case. We don't have our own, there's no negotiation that takes place. We either take the covenant that the Lord offers or we don't. And so, for instance, under the new covenant, what does that include? It includes things like this, that the Lord is going to cleanse us of our sins. We're going to be forgiven of our guilt. We will have new life. Our life will be new here on earth as well as in the life to come. He's going to adopt us into his family. Okay. We receive the righteousness of God. He provides us with his Holy Spirit. But then we have to surrender ourselves to him. We have to live a life that of trusting in him, and so forth. And so, but we don't, like, again, it is based upon his rule. So that's the first item of the pattern. The second one is that there has to be a death involved. There has to be a death of a substitute. And if you think about the oxen that were sacrificed here, they were innocent, right? There's nothing that they did wrong. There's, you know, those oxen or whatever, they were completely innocent. But there's that principle that there has to be a substitute. And that's what the Lord is laying down here in the Old Testament, this very important picture. So a sacrifice has to be made, and it's a substitute for the one that is being saved or that's entering into the covenant. The next thing is that there needs to be like the hearing of the covenant. So the Lord, in the first one, it's the Lord is the one who determines what the covenant is, what it says. And then this principle here would be that the covenant needs to be spoken. So it's like the gospel, right? So in verse 7, where Moses, he takes and he reads the book in the hearing of the people, that's like, in a sense, preaching gospel, basically saying, here is the covenant. And so the people have to hear the covenant that's being offered. And then next, there must be a response, right? And so we see, and also in verse 7, the second sentence there, it says, and they said, all that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient. And so there was a response to the hearing of the covenant or hearing of the word. And so, you know, again, like in a contract, right, we talk about the concept of acceptance of the terms. And so here we see that there must be a response, right? So when you go and you preach the gospel, you tell someone about the gospel, there has to be, in order for the person to enter into that covenant and be under and to receive the benefits of that covenant, right, salvation, they have to respond and say, I accept that covenant. And then lastly, there's blood involved, right? We see that the blood was sprinkled on the people. And so there's this blood that is to be received. There has to be the receiving of the blood of the sacrifice. And so just in the same way that as this covenant was entered into, there was a sacrifice and there was bloodshed and there was blood that was sprinkled on the people. In the new covenant, there you have the same thing, right? Jesus Christ died and he shed his blood. So there was that substitutionary sacrifice by Christ and the shedding of blood. And that blood, the blood of Jesus, it needs to be applied to our lives. And, you know, one thing, I just want to turn real quickly to Matthew chapter 24. I have to say that as we've been going through these books in the Old Testament, Genesis and Exodus, it's just, you know, as I'm looking at it closely, you know, studying for it, it's just really like opening up, like I'm really, all the pieces are making sense and coming together. As we go through, we'll just continue to point out things, but one thing I just want to read, and when I read it, it's weird. When I read it as part of studying this, it just kind of jumps out at you, right? Because here we see that there's this blood here that's sprinkled on. Let's go back and read Exodus chapter 24, verse 8. And look what it says. It says, and Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people and said, okay, so let's look at what he says in quotes. This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. And so he's saying this blood here, and this is all a picture, right? And we said that these pictures that are being painted in the Old Testament are pointing to Christ. And so he's saying here, this is this blood that is completing this covenant in this Old Testament Mosaic covenant. Here it is that's being sprinkled on you. And then just by way of just kind of looking at the new covenant, look at Matthew chapter 27 and 28. It says, then he, and that's Jesus, took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. And so we can see that Christ, you know, so all of these different animal sacrifices that were done in the Old Testament, we learn in Hebrews that those sacrifices were incomplete. They didn't have the ability to take away sin. There was nothing about those sacrifices that had any degree of permanence or any degree of an ability to make atonement for the forgiveness of sins. But when the Son of God, Jesus Christ, came, the Messiah, and who lived a perfect life and was a perfect sacrifice, that sacrifice and the blood that he shed, that sacrifice was sufficient. That one sacrifice was sufficient for the remission of sins. And it is the blood of the new covenant, in the same way that this blood that was sprinkled on the people here in chapter 24 was the way in which they kind of solidified this Mosaic covenant. Christ, the blood that he shed, was the way that the new covenant was completed. Verse 9 of chapter 24, it says, then Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone, and it was like the very heavens in its clarity. But on the nobles of the children of Israel, he did not lay his hand. So they saw God and they ate and drank. And so here we see that that Moses and this delegation that included Aaron, his two sons, and the 70 elders of Israel, they went up on to the Mount of Sinai. And it says here that they saw the God of Israel. You know, when we read this, it's like, you know, what do you make of it, right? No one really understands exactly what this is talking about, what they really were able to see. One of the things that I did as part of my study come across was that, you know, when it talks about someone seeing the God of Israel in the Old Testament, that you know, most believe that what they're seeing there is the second person of the Trinity, that is Jesus Christ in his pre-incarnate state, basically. And because, you know, no one has ever seen the Father in any time and would be able to live, right? And so here we see that they saw the God of Israel in the same way that Isaiah saw the God of Israel in Isaiah 6 and Ezekiel and John, right, in Revelation. It says here that in verse 11, that he did not lay a hand on them, okay? And so there was, you know, they didn't die. There was a sense of peace that they had there with God. And it says here that they ate and they drank. And This is a very significant point here that they ate and drank for a number of reasons. Number one is in these times, in these ancient times, when people would enter into a covenant, one of the things that they would do is have a covenant meal afterwards. And so in many ways, this is like them having a covenant meal. Another thing about this is that, you know, eating and drinking are activities that are entirely normal. They're normal activities of life. And so, you know, the fact that they were there in the presence of God and they were eating and drinking is really what God wants, right? He wants us to be in his presence, to have a sense of peace there, right? Where he's not going to lay a hand on them, right? And that he is involved in their everyday mundane activities of life, right? And that's really what the Lord wants, is that his presence would be with us all the time, you know. And sometimes people kind of compartmentalize God, where it's like, you know, there's like this special time, like, oh, you go to church or something, or you get on your knees and you pray and you're there in the presence of God and you have this great experience with God. And then you go about your life and you just are living your life, you know, without, you know, outside of the presence of the Lord, without really, you know, kind of including the Lord. And so, but the idea is to have, to be in the presence of God all the time, right? Be in the presence of God as we're going about our lives and just doing mundane things, eating and drinking and working and, you know, commuting and driving and whatever it is that we're doing. And so that's something that we can kind of take from this. Verse 12 says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and the commandments which I have written, that you may teach them.'" And so now the Lord is instructing Moses to come up to the mountain, and there's going to be a special time that the Lord is going to spend with Moses, and he's going to give him, you know, all of the law. He's going to put them on tablets of stone, and there's going to be a lot that he's going to share with Moses. And so verse 13, it says, "So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God." And so, you know, many would say that, you know, Joshua went, you know, part way there with Moses up to the mountain of God. And then verse 14, "And he said to the elders, 'Wait here for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let him go to them.'" And so he left Aaron and Hur in charge of the people. And we're going to find out as we move forward how that turned out. But Hur, you know, was, remember when there was that battle and Hur held up Moses's arms there. That's all we know about Hur. Verse 15 says, "Then Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. Now the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud." Verse 17, "The sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel." And so here we see all these things taking place where Moses is going up onto the top of this the Mount Sinai, and we have this cloud that's covering. But as the people of Israel are on, you know, at the bottom of the mountain there, looking up, they see this consuming fire. We know that that is something that is really a picture of the Lord, is, you know, a consuming fire. So there he goes. And then verse 18, it says, so Moses went into the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And so there was this very long period of time when Moses was up there in mountain, you know, face to face with the Lord. And, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, there's not any like mention of anything else like eating or whatever. And, you know, one thought, you know, you could have is that, you know, when you're in the presence of the Lord, there's no hunger, right? You don't have any hunger for anything. You know, anything that we could hunger for is satisfied in God's presence. But the bottom line here is that there are many things that the Lord will give to Moses, many instructions, which we are going to read about as we go forward into chapter 25 and beyond. And so we can see clearly that the Lord has done a couple of things here in, you know, bringing, you know, all of these, you know, kind of these elders of Israel there, and to see the Lord and to have that reverence, and then also then to bring Moses separately and have him be there for a period of time, to that there would be that recognition that Moses is indeed the leader that the Lord has chosen, and that the instructions that he would provide, that they would understand that those instructions are coming from God, and that they are to obey those instructions. So we'll stop here at the end of chapter 24, and we will pick up next week. And this will be where the Lord is, at least Moses is going to be, or the Lord is going to be speaking to Moses and giving him all of the instructions with regard to the tabernacle and all of the instruments, including the Ark of the Covenant and so forth. And these things are really, really important, because they're really pointing to the heavens, and they're all a picture of Christ and all these different things. And so this is why it's going to be really important that Moses would follow all these things carefully, because the Lord is wanting, all of these things are a picture of something, right? That's real, right? So I'll just say it like this. For instance, you know, there's like going to be the Holy of Holies, okay, that is going to be part of this tabernacle, but there is a actual Holy of Holies in heaven, right? It's important that Moses would follow all of these instructions carefully, because if he doesn't, then he's not painting the picture that the Lord is wanting the people to be able to see. And so in any event, we'll just stop there, and we'll just pick all of that up next week.